The race for content is getting more and more salacious. Exciting moves catch people's eyes. If you do this workout, you'll be jacked in 10 minutes. But in all the stories I've written that I would consider strong, understand what people think and why they have those thoughts. Use that to inform how you're gonna go about it different. There is some risk, right? Going about it differently is what can push you and an industry to the next level. Somebody has to be the first, right?
What does it mean to balance your passions with your pursuits? How do you combine all the different areas of your life that you care so much about and find a way to identify synergy? Well, I met someone and I followed someone who happens to do this quite well and in a very unique way. And today we're going to find out why. Today we are welcoming the creator, the strength and conditioning coach, overall kind human being, and the fitness director of Men's Health, Mr. Ebenezer Samuel. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. Good to be here. Traffic wasn't too bad. I know we had a couple of false starts, I think, trying to find a date to make this work. So I'm just excited that we were able to get everything synced up and really excited for this conversation.
Me too, man. One of the things that I left out is that you're also a writer. You have a background as a giant beat writer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah.
What was it like to get that job? I'm sure that was very energizing.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm actually going to, partly as I was hearing you talk about the intro about, you know, synergy and kind of marrying your passion to what you do well, I'll kind of give you a little bit more of the backstory. So I'll rewind slightly more before I got the Giants job. I came up in accounting, partly because, you know, growing up, that's kind of what my parents were like. You're really good at math, so go be an accountant, or you can play the piano. So, you know, Asian parents, they were trying to look out, right? I got my accounting degree, hated every second of it because I was really in college to go to the gym, right? I wanted to learn how to do push-ups, wanted to get stronger, and I was very interested. That made a lot of sense to me, just how to kind of learn how to do exercises, how they fit together. I was always into like the NFL combine and stuff like that. So went to school for accounting because that's what I was supposed to do. Spent most of my time in the gym, running track, trying to get bigger, stronger, faster. Realized I had this accounting degree that I had no interest in using. Actually wound up going to work construction because to me, I was like, if I work construction, I get to lift really, really heavy things. The thing I kind of missed in that equation is if I work construction, I lift really, really heavy things and it makes me tired. Therefore, I'm not really gonna be able to work out very well. I'm just beating up my body. Left that after about probably like 2 to 3 months and went back to school for journalism. And my angle for I went to Syracuse for journalism. My angle for going to school for journalism in the back of my mind is I came up, already love fitness. The greatest athletes and the most fit people we have are pro athletes, right? So in the back of my mind, I'm like, if I go to school for journalism, if I can get into sports writing, if I can get to ESPN, the magazine, or Sports Illustrated at the time before they were a train wreck, if I can get one of those places, then I can talk to athletes and ask them how they work out and how they get stronger and how they get in the shape I want to be in, how they get faster. So that was my whole angle, kind of getting into journalism. Got lucky enough coming out of Syracuse off the journalism program. I wound up with an internship at the New York Daily News. And they start you off, they throw you right into the fire. So you're covering, I think my first story ever as like an intern was like, go talk to Derek Jeter, which is not intimidating at all when you're like 22 years old. For a couple of years, you do high schools, you just get around, they send you to all the games, see what you're good at. My first love to play is basketball. My first love to cover is football because I understand the angles, understand speed, understand strength and how that all fits together. So I remember, God, I can't even remember what year it had to be. Probably like, I think it was 2011, 2012. I wound up getting the Giants beat writer job. And from there, it was just because, again, I think all sports are about a level of kind of fitness and conditioning and strength. And there's so much training that goes into it, right? Mm-hmm. But football is the one where it's really the most applicable, right? Like, how can you, you know, how can you be explosive in a straight line, right? How can you, you know, like the bench press applies directly to offensive linemen pushing defensive linemen off of. And there are such great athletes in there. So as soon as I got in there, covering the NFL is a dream for a couple of reasons. One, because it's a really nice lifestyle. You know the 16 games you have to go on the road for. They're once a week, so you can kind of come home and relax in between. There's a really nice rhythm for practice, and there's a whole lot of time, like literally after every single practice, they'll basically open the locker room to the media to talk to the players for about an hour, right? Some players don't want to talk to you. But a lot of them, I think too, because of what I was interested in, we would have really, really good conversations. Because all the other journalists, right, the ones who care about getting on ESPN one day, they would ask, say, in 2011, Victor Cruz, I don't know if you remember him, in 2011, they would ask Victor Cruz, you know, what's your contract situation? What do you think of that horrible play you had last week where you dropped the ball, right? They would ask all those questions, right? And I would wait till the end because the thing, you know, I knew how to do my job and I could ask those questions too. But the thing I cared most about was Victor Cruz. What are the best exercises to help me get more explosive, yes, right? So for me, it was a dream because I got to like do my job and I was solid, very good at that. But at the same time, near the end, I got to kind of indulge that passion you talked about the entire time, even when I was taking accounting, I really wanted to do.
What's so unique about you as a writer and an athlete is that you are a writer and an athlete. And I think there's this awesome trend now where we're getting more insight into the mind of an athlete because more athletes are learning to write and share their thoughts. And when you write, you can think more clearly. And you're extremely articulate. Obviously, you're a writer. You've been doing this for a long time, a few decades at this point, respectfully. You look great. And how we go about navigating our thoughts, figuring out our passions, our pursuits, you were kind of going where your curiosity took you, it sounds like, and following that. And even though you have this assignment of going to investigate and report on what happened at the game, you're really asking questions that matter to you and your soul. Mm-hmm. So once you had that opportunity to interact with all those different athletes and get to publish your work in the New York Daily News, you were there for 17 years?
Oh, no. Wow, 17 years. Dang, that's a long time. No, I think I was there for, God, I don't know. It wasn't quite 17. I think it was like 10, 11. I was there for a while.
So,
yeah.
After a decade working at a, how do you refer to them? You can't really call them a news, can you call them a newspaper? Is that you?
I think we still can. Half your readership won't know what those are, you know? So a news website, maybe that's where
we
go. A
news website, we'll call them. You turn the page and you get into fitness. You're already into fitness, pardon me, but you turn the page and now you get to work in men's health. Mm. Can you tell us what the thought process was in shifting from the New York Daily News into men's health?
One of those key elements for me was at the time, I think from a career standpoint, right, I needed to be able to read the terrain a little bit long term. And as we just joked around about 10 seconds ago, the newspaper, the concept of newspapers was sort of fading. And that business model was shifting. And so on some level, there was a part of me that for the longevity of my career and being able to continue to grow as a storyteller, at some point, I definitely was a little bit concerned that I wouldn't be able to tell the stories I wanted to at the New York Daily News anymore, right? So I think I was exploring because of that. But then too, I think at some, you know, I had done the Giants for probably, I want to say, 6 or 7 years. And it was very interesting because my first year was great. So 2011, they go to the Super Bowl, right? You think that's going to be your whole career. You're going to go to the Super Bowl every year. That was also, and this is a separate conversation for a sports podcast, but I also think that year they, like, John Mara, Tom Coughlin struck some kind of deal with the devil. Because after that, they were horrible, right? And so after that year, I think they made the playoffs one more time. But then I wound up covering this 5-11 team, you know, that was not very good. And it became the same thing over and over and over. And I was good at it, right? Got to know different players and stuff like that. But at the same time, I wasn't doing anything new, right? And I think when you get to that point in your career, it's like you can continue to do that and make some money and, you know, have an okay life, right? Or you can like aspire and push for more. And I think my more in the back of my mind, the whole time, by the way, that I was doing the Giants, I would, you know, I was the beat writer who, when I would go on a road trip, I would research a gym, right? That way, as soon as I landed in Jacksonville, Oklahoma, Seattle, right? I knew exactly where I was gonna train, right? Still hit all my workouts, right? Integrating all these things I'm learning from the players. Like that was my passion the whole time. I think what I wanted to do was grow and find a way to, I feel like my whole career has been about trying to find a way to merge what I really love with this skill that which I would consider goes beyond writing. I think it's about storytelling, right? And which with this skill of storytelling that, you know, I grew up reading, you know, again, ESPN, the magazine, Sports Illustrated, came up watching, you know, SportsCenter. Also read, you know, my mom like got me a lot of like, you know, books like great stuff like Jack London, Ernest Hemingway, right? So you read that stuff and it's like I wanted to find a way to marry storytelling to fitness a little bit better. So this opportunity came along at Men's Health. At the time, it was a fitness editor position. And they actually, I think, at the time hadn't been able to fill it for a bit. So then I saw it and I kind of, it was actually like a flashback because now I'm going to go back in time very quickly to my Syracuse experience was an intensive grad program. So it lasted literally 9 months, right? But at the end, you basically have to get an internship and they help you get an internship. So they actually set up an interview with me for Men's Health for an internship, right? Which I bombed. I walked into the interview, I remember, and again, this is like 21-year-old me, not the brightest egg in terms of understanding how to handle that stuff or be articulate. And I remember the lady asking me, her first question is, you know, what's your favorite magazine and why, right? The natural, smart, intelligent answer that anybody who understands how to get a job is gonna say is Men's Health, and here are 17 reasons why. Naturally, again, as I've said, I grew up on sports, ESPN, the magazine. So I go off about how ESPN, the magazine is fantastic. And, you know, great art. And I love the writing. And these are my three favorite writers. And she's like, so why are you here again? So I kind of had struck out in my past with Men's Health. But I think I realized like I feel like there's a poetry sometimes to how your career goes. And to kind of get another chance at that, a different version of me that also understood fitness a lot more, right? Because I'd been around the NFL Combine, talked to all these players, spent, you know, a decade plus like training myself, right? Figuring out how to do push-ups and bench presses, making mistakes along the way. I thought the timing was kind of perfect. And, you know, so it just worked out. So I think it was Men's Health is kind of what I was almost like unintentionally grooming myself to do from the very start of my career. Learn how to tell stories, learn how to fuse that to like the service aspect of fitness, to giving people wisdom, right? About how they can train. Learn how to take what NFL athletes are doing at a very high level, but then distill that to the general population level. And this is something we can get into later. I believe like what top athletes do has a trickle down effect on how we're all training, right? Or it should, right? We don't need to, you know, run a 4:5:40, right? But it can help us in our marathon runs, our you know, running to go get the mail, all that kind of stuff, right? And so to get that chance to do it was honestly like super exciting. And, you know, I haven't looked back.
There's a few different things that you parsed out over there. I want to zoom in on one thing in particular. I've done hours of research on your content, but I've never really heard you talk about writing. And I want to kind of extract some value from you, if you don't mind. What makes for good storytelling? We know change, which I could see changes in the body, changes in life. We know that the arc of a hero, which we'll also get into, requires certain stages. But in your view, what makes for effective storytelling?
Wow, that's a hard one. That is a college class, actually. I'll give you three things, and I think these are the three things that very often, one, I think like the whole game of storytelling has gotten more challenging for the industry, in part because when I was coming up, one of the great things is I got to learn from, you know, some really great writers at the New York Daily News, you know, older guys who have been doing it for years, right? So I remember like, and I loved the Great American Feature, right? Coming up, like, I didn't think I was gonna get into fitness as a career, even though, like, again, I was kind of like searching and moving in that direction. But I definitely, you know, I definitely thought like, you know, the one thing I can do, right, I might not be able to bench 225 ever in my life or tell anybody how to get better at that. But, you know, I can write, like that's a skill I had coming up. So I can write about Adrian Peterson benching 225, right? So I definitely study storytelling a lot. And I think the three critical things in any good story, and I think this goes, one, it works for writing, but I think it goes across mediums too, right? So movies, even to some extent, like our social posts, like our conversations, I think the things are, one, it needs an arc, right? Like it has to start somewhere and end somewhere, and it has to feel satisfying. So I think a through line is really important. Anybody, there are people who can write, are great writers of words, right? They can write good sentences, right? And they, you know, they sound lyrical, they're like iambic pentameter, all that stuff, right? But the great writers of stories know how to start you on a journey and then take you to an endpoint, right? Critical in, so I think that's the first thing. There has to be like a journey and like an intent of the writer to take you on a journey, right? Even, again, I think this even applies to like Instagram posts, right? When I'm posting biceps workout, right? It's a weird thing to say in this conversation, but I'm kind of posting that workout. There's kind of like a theme or a reason or how this workout fits together. I'm gonna take you from the beginning to the end, right? And the satisfying part for you is hopefully you'll execute the workout, right? Mm. Two, and I think this is the tricky part in a writing culture that is increasingly, or just like a content culture that is increasingly like SEO, right? Search engine optimization, search, like make Google happy instead of making your reader happy. The big piece in there is then conflict and tension, right? A story can't just, and this I think is what happens very often. A story will kind of flatline, you know, here's a guy, you know, or here's a theme or something like that. And here's a bunch of stuff about that theme, you know, categorized again to make Google happy, right? What satisfies a reader or any consumer of content is the idea that, you know, there has to be something wrong, and not necessarily wrong, right? It's, we're not looking to create synthetic conflict, but there has to be something that keeps you reading throughout and carries you, that like you're trying to figure out, or the main character in your story is trying to figure out, or, you know, just something has to be, there has to be something that has to be resolved, right? And if there's nothing that has to be resolved, then at some point, all the consumers of that content are gonna check out from the content a little bit, right? So I think there's that piece, there has to be conflict and tension in the story. And then the third piece is there has to be a satisfying resolution. The two things I'm obsessed with in all the great, and I've, you know, I've written plenty of not great stories too, but in all the stories I've written that I would consider strong, I'm obsessed with the first sentence, right? I want to create a little hint of conflict in that very first sentence I give the reader. I'm obsessed, and I want it to sound good and feel good and get them into it, right? And it starts with the first sentence and then builds into the first paragraph, and then builds into, I would probably say, the first 15% of the story. And then I'm obsessed with the last sentence, right? This is something I think it's really important that the writer, the creator of the content, have the final word on some level, right? And across different mediums, that works in different ways, right? But the simplest way to end a story is always, you know, with a quote, a quote from the key subject, right? Let them have the final word. But the great writers and the great stories, I would argue, and there are some exceptions to this, obviously, but the great writers and great stories know how to have that final word, and create, in the process of having that final word, create that great resolution.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love hearing you talk about storytelling. Mm. Right now, I'm really working on refining my writing skills. And as an attorney, you know, we're trained on brevity. We're trained on being concise and getting right to the point, not wasting any time. And in this kind of content culture, as you outlined, it's all about just being able to capture and keep the attention. And you do that through the three different pillars that you outlined. I'm gonna wash this back a few times and think, like, how can I outline and follow that trajectory to create and write better stories? The one other thing.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please,
say one thing. The thing you said about brevity, though, still holds completely true, right? Mm. So I think if I can add one more characteristic to all this, the thing you said about brevity holds completely true, because there's nothing worse than reading like 6,000 words on anything, right? And really, of those words, like 2,000 you cared about, you know? So there is this back end that it, like, and if I can, I feel like we're gonna wind up talking about it at some point because you've hinted it. If I can go to a superhero movie very quickly, that's the magic to me of The Dark Knight, right? Like The Dark Knight is a lean, muscular movie, right? There's not a lot of fat in it, right? Whenever, and I think like that's good storytelling, you know? So when I'm trying to write a profile or anything, right? And this is something that comes really, or happens really well for magazines and newspapers, even though they barely exist these days, you have to like make it fit on the page, right? And that means you have to make hard cuts and you have to eliminate all the fat, right? And so the end result is lean, muscular storytelling. So all the stuff you did in law, I want to get somebody's attention and hold it for, I'd rather hold it for 800 words where they can't look away, right? Than give them 2,000 words where they can keep looking away and I don't need to hold their attention. So brevity is still the key. It's going to, depending on how far you go with content, it's what will make you great.
It's funny you say that in the frame that you do about the word count, because I noticed in your writing, particularly with Men's Health, and we can kind of get into it now, is that it's so concise, like you were saying with your content, the purpose of a biceps workout and how you want the reader to feel when they're viewing your content. You put out a piece on superhero pecs. Hmm. And for those who don't know, Eb, myself, I'm a Marvel fan and a DC fan. Obviously, Batman is my guy. And to see how you combined, and that's what I was talking about at the top, your passions, your pursuits, sports, fitness, writing, and skills. Marvel, superheroes in general, opining on it, getting paid to do it. Hmm. Like for me, that is that's an arc, that's a dream, that's what it's all about, right? When you hear that, when you kind of reflect on it, I would also argue it's part of your creator journey. And I wanted to cover these separately, but I think I'm finding a synergy here where you have this thread and the through line obviously is you, your skills, your passions. What's it like to kind of lead that lifestyle where every day you're overlapping your passions and your pursuits?
I feel incredibly lucky, right? Because, and in part because at times it was, there were pieces there, right? But I didn't get a chance to fuse them all together. I think what I've learned as I've gone on, and this sounds a little bit trite from a career standpoint, is again, there were pieces that I was always kind of dabbling in, right? But I couldn't really quite fuse everything together. And that was also because like those other jobs, I could be part of myself. You know, I could be the writer, right? Or I could be the analyzer of football, right? Or I could be I could tell a story, but I could do those things individually, but I couldn't like do it all together, right? And Men's Health has been great because it lets me do all those things together and it really lets me kind of like be myself, right? One of the things I think that when you break into any sort of kind of storytelling business is you think you have to fit in. And they kind of teach you that in J school too. It's like read, you know, they kind of teach you that in the business, partly because again, make Google happy, right? So make your story like everybody else's, you know, because Google is looking for certain things, right? And in the process of that, you fail to capitalize on like the original ideas and original themes and times where you can bring in your personal experience, right? Because I obviously try to, I'm obsessed with superheroes, you know, as everybody knows. And I've been able to make that kind of a piece of like my persona on social, right? But there's a world where, you know, I'm at Men's Health and that's not necessarily their ethos, say. And I don't trust myself, or I haven't like mentally empowered myself to make a pitch about superheroes or to be that person in the building. And so, you know, that rise of superhero pack story becomes, you know, nothing wrong with this, the more Google friendly version. Google is going to hate me on this podcast. But the more Google friendly version of that story is, you know, 5 ways to train your chest so you can look jacked, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. But you want to eventually, I think, as a storyteller, whether you're working for somebody or you're working for yourself, feel that comfort to bring in your personal experience, because that's what's going to make the way I cover and disseminate and educate on fitness different from the way you will, different from the way, say, a Brian Mazza will, is we all have different backgrounds. I think what we have to do, and what I've been lucky enough to do, is be placed in a position where I can allow my love of superheroes and video games and storytelling period, I've been able to let that seep into the content I create.
Awesome. Man, it's so cool to hear about what that feeling is, how you capture it, how you articulate it, and also a roadmap for people to be inspired by, to know that it is possible to go and achieve and synergize the things that matter to you most. You were on the creator trend, it's fair to say, ahead of quite a lot of others. In your mind, in your opinion, your humble opinion, you have quite a modest audience of a few hundred thousand people. And that's separate from your, what I would say, professional endeavors, your personal brand as a few hundred thousand people. Me being one of them that follow and appreciate your content, learn from your content. And I can firsthand attest, I've done this man's training sessions for months at a time, just the Instagram sessions. And I felt changes in my body. I've seen physical changes in my body and I got stronger as a result. So if you haven't checked out his workout sessions, I highly recommend that you do. A lot of it's about control. So I digress. So when it comes to the creator economy, where things are going, as someone who started out obviously without an audience, what was your mindset in audience building, community building, and growing your personal brand?
It was interesting because when I left the New York Daily News, and I think this is very much kind of old school and newspaper mentality, I remember being, I think, my second to last year covering the Giants, I mentioned the idea of personal brand to one of the older reporters. And he basically said, never say that word in front of me again, right? I was like, that's a little weird. This is where the world is going. And I think that's where, you know, we look at it, and personal brand is where media and everything has gone. When I got to Men's Health, I was definitely still a little bit more of a writer. Didn't hugely think about that. But then as I started meeting these trainers, right, you know, I got to learn from some really cool guys like Andy Spear, Don Saladino, if you're familiar with those names, Gunnar Peterson, who's been on the...
I know Don's content, I should say.
Don, like Gunnar Peterson, who's been on your podcast.
Gunnar,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of those guys taught me, I think I learned a couple of things from them. One, I learned that it is possible and useful from a fitness standpoint to have a personal brand. And two, I think the thing I realized is the way I'm going about my training, when I would train with a Don or a Gunner and learn a ton from them, the way I tend to approach training is a little bit different from them. So I started asking myself, what are the pieces of my training? Also, my journey is different from them, right? Don is like, I swear, Don has been jacked like forever, you know? Coming up, like I was the kid who, I was like kind of like the runting class. Took a while to grow into my body. Took a while to understand how to move. Like I remember going to gymnastics class as like an 8 and a 9-year-old, because the gymnastics is another thing like Asian parents love to make their kids do. And like struggling to do like push-ups, you know, never could figure it out. I think I kind of had like a little bit more of like a hard gainer journey than some of these other guys. So I was like, how can I put that out there? And how can I help other people understand how to move through their bodies, right? Mm. The other thing is I had kind of picked up a certain level of education, just, you know, being like a CSCS, having a little bit of an exercise background from college, having trained people. I hadn't done it on like a full-time basis when I was at the New York Daily News because there was no time, right? But at the same time, I had realized certain things, there are certain ways that I teach, say, a biceps curl or a row that are different from some of these, from a Gunner or from a Don Saladino. So putting that out there might start to help some people. So I think my main motivation as I started to kind of grow my Instagram, and this is also one of the things I think I learned in Men's Health too, before I get to my motivation, is it was a different kind of storytelling, right? When I was at the newspaper, my job was to kind of talk to Victor Cruz or write like a great profile on Eli Manning or something like that. And so I was kind of telling their story. It was kind of take their quotes and lyricize them so that they kind of fill those slots we talked about before in terms of resolution, conflict. And I actually remember struggling early on at Men's Health because I was trying to do that with like biceps and chest and stuff like that. Just tell like a story about them. But what I learned at Men's Health and what I kind of learned on this side of media is one of the key things, and we still want to hit those things of conflict, resolution, et cetera, but it's different, right? Because the resolution is the resolution for the reader who's coming or for the consumer of fitness content is what can I get out of it, right? Like how can I take that brilliant story you told me about chest and make my own chest that way, right? Mm-hmm. Or how can I take that brilliant story you told me about the bench press and get my bench press from 225 to 275, right? It's a unique brand of storytelling in that it's super selfless, right? It's really about like the end product for the where you can get from my workouts, right, is a lot more important than showcasing myself. And so once I realized that from Men's Health, I was like, I can kind of, one, serve as an extension of the brand. So I'm doing my job because I'm, especially when I ascended to fitness director, you know, that is not a role where I'm supposed to just, I mean, I can just edit a bunch of stories, but there's also a chance to make like a real impact for people like you, other followers, anybody who's going to, you know, run into that content in Instagram search, right? And there's a really cool chance to make an impact and maybe make things a little bit easier for like the next version of me that comes along. Mm. To that way, when they're 14 and they can't do a push-up, right? And instead of having to experiment with like 8 million different methods of doing it before stumbling onto the fact that I can put my hands on a chair and then put my hands on something lower like a step and then put my hands on the ground, they can just see it in the post, right? So I think it was a lot about a chance to make impact. And when you make impact, to some extent, you're going to, you know, it's kind of like how you introduced this section, right? You kind of, you know, you said, hey, this worked for me. And so if you guys haven't tried it, try it, right? So when you make impact, and these rules I think have applied for centuries, right? So, somebody tells somebody else about it, tell somebody else about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've not just grown a personal brand, which is cool. Even though it really annoys that guy from the New York Daily News who told me not to, but you've helped a lot of people. And I think that's kind of my big like end game. I want to help, we're in a weird time in culture too. I think where people don't move great, right? Or they don't move at all, or they're afraid to move for a variety of reasons, right? And I think what I'd like to do both personally and through Men's Health is help people understand, like empower them to move in general and then create better forms of movement for themselves. Cause then we all get healthier, we live longer, and like all that good stuff happens that, you know, just all that good stuff happens for our bodies.
Hearing you talk about your creator journey and the motivation behind it for me is extremely inspiring because there's this great sentiment about impact. At the end of the day, no one will remember my name, but maybe they will feel my impact. And for you to make that a pillar in your motivation and mindset for how you went about curating your content. This is a problem I struggled with. You don't have to struggle with it the same way because I'm here. And it's funny because you mention on one side that where this culture is currently at, or society is currently at, where on one side we're afraid to move. At the same time, there's never been more access to information that helps us feel comfortable in our own skin and bodies. And for me, and I try to talk about this as often as possible. When you have more body awareness, you have more mental and self-awareness. And you were talking about it earlier where it's like, I couldn't feel in my body the way I wanted to. And I personally struggled with that. And I also talked about control and tempo. And that's obviously a principle that you hold dear in your training. JTM, Jay Marinac, shout out to Jay. One day I will get you on this podcast. I'm manifesting it. I learned all about tempo and control from Jay and his programs. And then your content comes along and then, oh, here's a different take on tempo from a bodybuilding perspective. It's not as functional. This is more about, you know, aesthetics are obviously a byproduct of Jay's programs, but with yours, there's this element of, okay, we're chasing superhero status fitness. And there's always a Marvel pitch in a lot of your content, I know, too, you're manifesting as well. So I know you didn't get the Shang-Chi role, but I'm rooting for you, and I'm rooting for you soon. So where do you see the trends of the creator economy going? As I'm sure it's a goal to continue to elevate your personal brand separately, the men's health fitness brand, and you know, we could briefly touch on that. Where do you see the creator economy going now?
That's a really hard question. Yeah, I think it's a really hard question because it changes very quickly, right? I think at the heart, like one of the things I try to do is kind of understand the creator trends, right? And I think we all need to be like cognizant of them. But then at the same time, it's kind of like find your own way, right? The key thing at a base level is we still all have to like really engage our audience, right? And I think what's gonna happen very soon is it's gonna become a little bit more about engaging your audience and less about kind of playing to many trends, right? What do we have to do to engage our audience, right? And I think you're seeing it a little bit is we have to again tell a story, right? Also, like we have to grab them in the first like 3 to 4 seconds sometimes. But I think what's going to happen is a lot, especially from a fitness standpoint, there's a lot of like crazy stuff out there, mm-hmm. right? Both in terms of workouts being done, right? And also things being said, you know, it's like, oh, if you do these 5 moves, you will instantly have like a big chest, right? Like we're getting more, basically the creator, for creators, especially as it pertains to fitness, we're almost getting to that. I feel like there was a point for media journalism, right, where things got almost too tabloid and too hypey. And the consumers of that content then started to lose a little bit of respect and trust, right, in mainstream media, mm-hmm. right? And that opened the door for a whole ton of things that, again, that's like a whole college class or like a whole separate podcast, right? I think... the race for content is getting more and more kind of salacious. Again, like exciting moves, right? Catch people's eyes, you know? Exciting claims, you know? Again, we still want to tell stories. We still want to engage people because that's critical. But a level of no nonsense to it, right? And a level of honesty, right? One of the interesting things I've tried to do throughout my career when I'm all out of place, because I do not think I'm the most... like loudest, most exciting guy all the time, right? But I do try to be very honest with people, you know? And I think what the industry is gonna look for is a level of honesty from creators, right? And also like just a level of kind of almost no nonsense, like cutting through the BS, right? You look at the success of Lane Norton, right? Even on social, I mean, his whole brand is cutting through the BS, right? And I think that works. And I think that becomes critical in the long term. The only other thing I'll add to that is it's really hard to cut through the BS in 15 seconds, right? So I think what we're going to see is longer form versions of that. That way we can have nuanced discussions, right? The challenge for us in fitness has always been finding that balance between the level of simplicity, right? That way, like, the mom in Oklahoma can understand what this exercise may do, right? And the level of nuance in that, like, this exercise is for a very select part of the population, right? But at the same time, it's worth you kind of having a little bit of cognizance over it, right? So I think it's about, I think it's going to be about kind of striking that balance, right? Getting a little, like, finding ways for us to get more nuanced, finding ways for us to cut through the BS, and also being willing to embrace these long form versions of storytelling and versions of just explanation. Like, let the 15 second TikTok post or Instagram post become a gateway to the 15 minute YouTube video. And how we effectively get people to the long form version, that is, like, our big challenge, and that's what we got to push for.
That was dynamic, because my next question naturally is going to be, how do you design content around that from a capacity that you're comfortable sharing? We could edit out what isn't necessary to share, perhaps from a men's health perspective, but also from, I think, My personal curiosity is more from a personal branding perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting what you said about the engagement aspect, because now we were talking about this earlier, where you see people with hundreds of thousands of followers, hundreds of views, no engagement.
Yeah.
You see Instagram putting out new features like polls, compelling the creator to engage their audience more. So this way, I guess it meets the mission of keeping more people on the platform more often, more attention, more ads, more money. How do you see yourself from a personal branding perspective adapting to what you just outlined?
Simplistically, I got to figure it out. but I think the two things I like to think about, right? Because again, I do not think at a base level, 15 to 30 seconds, I can only do so much with that,
sure,
right? So what I like to do, I like to think of, but again, that's like the nature of that forum, right? It's like, you have to get, for 8 million reasons, you have to get good at YouTube Shorts, you have to get good at the short form of storytelling. So what I like to do is actually think about like the theme and the base of my brand, right? And I try to think of almost like, one, I'm thinking about, like, what's the long form story that I really want to tell, right? With my, and I'm going to kind of keep it to the fitness and social content for my personal brand, just because I think it's a little bit easier for me to distill and speak on that. So my long form messages are, one, like, you know, I don't think there's a huge difference between like bodybuilding concepts and functional, right? They're all kind of the same thing, right? Two, like, what I try to do is, like, I fuse different styles of training. You know what I mean? Like, I like to, like, some pieces, like, sometimes, like, CrossFit formats, right? With strength moves, right? I've been doing, you know, like, all the, like, I want a little bit of mobility in there. I want some yoga. Like, cardio is not unimportant, right? We need all these qualities to be complete and to be the separate discussion, to be, like, you know, I want to look, move, and feel like a superhero, right? So that means I need to do more than just lift heavy things, you know? So those are a couple examples of themes, like, I think about, and long stories that I like to tell, right? And what I'm trying to do, I think, with my Instagram posts and other social posts and even at Men's Health to some extent, is that's, like, my, like, overarching story, you know? And it's weird because I think there is, like, there are pieces of what we talked about in that storytelling bit earlier. There's some of that in there, right? Like, there is, like, conflict. Not everybody thinks, you know, some people are like, if you're going to be a power lifter, if you want to deadlift 600 pounds, you're only going to deadlift 600 pounds. You're never going to run, like, a 4 minute mile, right? Well, nobody's going to, you know, but, like, I'm like, we can hit multiple notes, right? I want to be capable in multiple ways. And that's, like, the overarching long-term story I'm telling. So if we substitute even what I just accidentally did there, long form storytelling for long term storytelling. Same idea, right? And what I've got to do is in snippets, like if in these little 30 second snippets, you know, like the stuff you talked about, I'm super happy that you got the idea of control from all my posts, right? But I would contend you didn't get that just from one post, okay? You got it from the great breadth of all these 30-second posts. You picked up on like control and the importance of body control, feeling what's happening in the muscle, right? Those are all themes, and that's my long-term storytelling message. And I'm telling it every single day in slightly different ways and in slightly different modules that also hit slightly different audiences, like the biceps guy, the guy who just wants legs, the guy who just wants abs, right? And in some fashion, we're kind of just telling it with those small pieces. So I think that's the secret. It's like, have your overarching kind of mission, right? And have your overarching story that you really want to tell. And all you're doing is like, it's almost like you pin that on like your refrigerator or on like the top of like your Apple Notes or whatever. And all you're doing is repeatedly, like whenever you're thinking about your content, you don't forget that, because that's the long-term message and you tell it in different forms throughout.
You're such an articulate human being, and I know the audience is getting immense amounts of value from what you have to say, because what is Inside the Inspired? It's about inspired action. It's about actionable insights from high performers that help you build meaning and resilience into your life. And what you've outlined from your creator journey to your professional career to marrying your passions with your pursuits, we didn't even spend that much time talking about superheroes, and I feel like that's a whole other podcast in and of itself. It's a blueprint for people to really study. It's a case study, because you're putting words and giving examples of times when you were doubted, right? Never use the word personal brand again. And you've amassed an audience yourself despite that information or insight from, I would assume, if he's been at the New York Daily News for a while, probably an esteemed journalist to some degree. And also having that mindset of, I'm gonna do this anyway. Mindset is a big core component of what we talk about. And I think as someone who's endured from a physical perspective, from a mental perspective, emotional perspective, a variety of different situations, in facing a moment like that, where someone tells you, this isn't the way, don't say that to me again, how do you respond, and how do you use that moment to help catalyze your growth? How has your mindset been a pillar in your personal and professional career trajectory?
That's interesting. I'll go back to that moment just because I know exactly where it was. It was on the Giants practice field, and I know exactly kind of what I thought, right? And I think it was kind of, there were two steps in what I thought. The first was cognizance, right? Because it is kind of useful to know that that's what other people in my industry think right now, right? So that's what all these kind of guys in my industry think, and that's how they're approaching it, right? That's useful for me because, like, then I know if I choose to approach it differently, one, there is some risk, right? But two, there's also like a lot of potential because nobody else is doing it that way, right? So I think that was the first thing I thought at the time. And then the second thing I thought, somebody has to be the first, right? And the first is kind of a cool, I mean, it's a risky role, right? But it's also kind of a cool role. The people who do things differently, and I think this is one thing I've learned kind of throughout my career and just throughout, you know, throughout media, right? And even throughout social, right? The people who do things differently and who are willing to put new ideas out there are the ones who kind of build audience and get, if I was doing the exact same things everybody else was doing on Instagram, for example, right? Or even in the way like I put out tutorials for men's health on exercises, right? Then you would have no reason to actually like follow me or be interested, right? Because it's the exact same stuff you can find everywhere else, right? It has to be different, right? So I think in that moment, I was like, yeah, thank you for your thoughts. You're wise. And there's, you know, I didn't say that, right? But then back in my head, I'm like, this is a wise person who has a perspective, right? But at the same time, let me kind of chart my own path, right? And in charting my own path, like you wouldn't, again, if I'm not going to do that, then there's no purpose for us having this conversation X amount of years later, understand what people think and why they have those thoughts, and then use that to inform how you're going to go about it different, because going about it differently is what can push you and an industry and sometimes in some situations to the next level.
A category of one, you are the niche, right?
Says so much better than me.
It's something I investigate a lot. It's something I'm curious about because so many people silo themselves into a particular category. And I think in this creator economy, what we hear about a lot is, or even outside the creator economy, a lot of it's about, you know, pick a specific skill. You know, inch thick, mile wide. If you try to be everything to everyone, ultimately you're nothing to no one. And on a personal note, I can't sit down and say, this is my thing. There's a lot of things I like to do. And I find and I look for different ways to combine the things that I'm interested in. And what fascinates me about your journey is that, you know, you have that overlap. You brought everything together. And I think a lot of people are inspired by that. I think a lot of people are looking for insights how they can go about building their lifestyles and their bodies to a place that they can be proud of and is functional, mobile, able, and allows them to provide for their families, right? Like that becomes the dream, ultimately. So as we kind of round this thing out, I feel like it's important to kind of go through a couple more things. Let's just touch on superheroes for a hot sec, because I feel like there's an ode that if I didn't address superheroes with you, I'd be doing myself a disservice. I think an easy question would be, what do you think of where Marvel's at right now? but maybe more so, you offer some very strong opinions on the superhero arc and the movies where they're currently at. How do you see Marvel bouncing back from what we can all pretty much admittedly say hasn't been the finest last 5 years?
It's weird. I think there's a part of me that doesn't see Marvel completely bouncing back. God, that's such a downer note to end this podcast on, isn't it?
We're not ending yet.
I think they have an uphill battle because I also think it's about the industry that they're in. Right. The biggest mistake, and I think we all saw it coming, was when they took things to scale, right? Like after Avengers Endgame. It was also gonna be really, really hard to top Avengers Endgame, right? Like that to me, it's actually wild. I was doing biceps last night in the garage, and I'm not watching Echo or Shang-Chi or anything like that. I'm watching Avengers Endgame, right? Because it's also nuts. That film was 5 years ago, right? And I think what they have to do is, one, find ways to tell smaller stories and be okay with that, right? Because the next world conflict is just going to be, or the next conflict that's going to end the universe is just going to be another version of the Thanos conflict, right? So I think you have to do better at that. You have to find ways to tell smaller stories. The other thing, I feel like audiences connected a lot with Iron Man and Captain America and Thor, and it's because those characters were compelling, right? And I feel like what they haven't done with some of their more recent characters, right, whether that be, you know, She-Hulk, or even Captain Marvel, I feel like they haven't given us characters we really connect with, right? Who are flawed, or they've created synthetic flaws, but they haven't taken the time to, they haven't, and that is a thing too, like Iron Man and Captain America. Iron Man was three films, right? Captain America was three films. Thor was four, right? And I mean, the fourth one was a train wreck, but yeah, you know.
Finish it.
Yeah, I feel, but the characters really, the characters were compelling, and I feel like what they haven't done is take the time. They kind of try to rush their development of characters now. And you have to almost take your time and step back a little bit and let us get absorbed in the mythology of a She-Hulk or of a Captain Marvel over the course of seasons, right? Just show us different sides of them, right? Over the course of four movies, you know? Don't try to do a team-up film after, you know, right after you've done one film. I think that's the key for Marvel. And I have many more ideas. I did not give you the best ones, Kevin, but you can connect with me on social.
Yeah. I'm optimistic about Daredevil and an attorney. I'm optimistic about Spider-Man 4. I know they started writing, and I'm optimistic about Deadpool. Shout out Don Saladino. Hope to bring you on this podcast as well. Said that a couple times. And Wolverine, obviously. I think there's a chance to still save it. So as we round this thing out, there's a question that I pose to all my guests that I'm not going to pose to you. If the future version of yourself, 10 years from now, were to fly in and offer you some advice, assuming he's in that ideal spot in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
I think he would probably tell me to be patient, right? To be patient and continue to follow my instincts, which seems like an easy thing to do, but it's not, because I think especially in the social game right now, and the content creation game, you feel like you want like a level of instant gratification out of things. You know, did this post get enough likes in 24 hours or enough views? And you think impact is instant, right? And I think one of the keys with impact is you don't always realize it when it's happening, even though the metrics try to make you think you're supposed to realize it when it's happening. So I think the big thing he would tell me is be patient. You know the metrics, but don't live your life by them. And trust your instincts. Because I think that is also, again, when you have metrics that tell you this concept didn't work, it takes a level of, because the metrics are basically that guy who told me don't start a personal brand, right? It's a different version, right? But it takes a level of, okay, I'm going to just go against the grain and not worry about the metrics and keep doing my thing. And I feel like that level of kind of perseverance and intensity and focus is still necessary to produce good content and continue to make an impact.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ebenezer Samuel, please let the audience know where they can keep up with your journey.
Best place is Instagram at EbenezerSamuel23, and also the Men's Health Strength and Diversity Program. So applications are open for that. I believe it's, if you just do a search for Men's Health, Strength and Diversity, Google owes me that favor. And that's a chance to kind of work directly with myself and a team of other like great trainers and kind of editors and producers at Men's Health to, it's for trainers to work on your fitness game. So would love for people to sign up for that.
Definitely go check that out. Link up with Eb. His content is, he just told you everything that he's going to be up to. I had a blast here today. Subscribe to the channel, follow for more. Once again, my name is Jonathan Cohen, and this is Inside the Inspired.